Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Music in the South Bay, on March 16th, 2015. Voted Best Local Radio Show in the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014, and we are certainly looking for a repeat. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. It's also a beautiful place to listen to live music. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by Viridian, the official solar energy provider to the South Bay Show. Viridian also works with Solar City, the famed solar installer with the CEO Elon Musk, the same CEO of Tesla Motors and SpaceX. We're going to have more information about them as a sponsor as time goes on, but I hope that everyone that can, any homeowner within the listening audience, will seriously consider solar energy installation. The average family in America can make no greater impact on the carbon footprint of our societies around the world than putting solar on their homes. So I hope that you'll consider that. You can find out more at solar.greenenergyfire.com. That's solar.greenenergyfire.com. So this is one of my favorite shows. We have, of course, this great volunteer symphony in the South Bay, and if you've not heard about it, you really, really need to check it out. They're going to be performing this coming Friday, the 20th, and we have with us their music conductor, Barry Brisk. Barry was first conducted in public at the age of 14 when he performed selections from South Pacific at his graduation from Webster Junior High School in West Los Angeles. As a student, he also conducted the orchestras at University High School, Mount St. Mary's College, and the University of Music, formerly Academy of Music, in Vienna, Austria, where he studied with the prominent conductor teacher Hans Swarovski. Professionally, Brisk has conducted many orchestras in Southern California, as well as in Mexico and Austria. Maestro Brisk has been music director of the Beach City Symphony since 1994 and is particularly proud of having expanded the orchestra's repertoire. He has conducted works by more than 80 composers, more than a dozen of whom are living, and we hope they're still living. And Maestro Barry Brisk, thank you for joining us on the South Bay Show.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Joe.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. I certainly looked forward to these shows because it is such a treasure to have a standing volunteer symphony in the South Bay. It's so convenient. Of course, we're blessed with great music here in Los Angeles. And if you want to make the trek, the L.A. Phil is amazing, but it's wonderful to have you in the South Bay. And so first, to start off with, Barry, I'd like to know, we're going to do these shows, and we've been doing these shows regularly for 2 years now, prior to a performance, to let the wider audience in the South Bay know that these are coming, and I'm so thrilled. You have a wonderful new website at beachcitysymphony.org. It's really a wonderful website. But what have you personally been doing for the last couple of months since the last performance? What, anything changed, or what's going on with you?
Oh, no, my life is about the same. Yeah. We go and visit our 4.5-year-old grandson in Riverside, but yeah, That's probably not what you want to hear about. I give music lessons, piano, violin, and viola, and I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I'm composing. I won't say what I'm working on because you never know how far they'll get, the compositions, but I'm always composing and doing things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And I also play viola in other ensembles. So I've been keeping busy, doing my usual thing. Nothing odd or different has happened since we last spoke in January.
Okay. Now, I want to make sure I get this right and that everyone can find it. It's Beach Cities Symphony, singular, beachcitysymphony.org.
Correct.
And there's two S's between cities and symphony there.
Right. If you're going to the website, you have to have both S's, right?
That's right. beachcitysymphony.org. Now, this upcoming evening, and this is another tack that I wanted to take today, is to talk a little bit about how you choose the pieces. And I love hearing the stories about how pieces are chosen to get in the programs. I know it's probably was a long time ago, maybe even last year, that you planned this lineup of pieces. But tell us a little bit about, for instance, we're going to hear Gordon Jacob, Concerto for Flute and String Orchestra. And I'm always interested in how these pieces come about. How did this come about to be added to the show?
Right. just before we get into that, I want you to know that the programs are organized more than a year in advance.
Oh.
So next season's program of four concerts was organized last fall, just so that you have an idea of the planning that goes into it. To come back to the Gordon Jacob Flute Concerto, every so often we feature musicians from within the orchestra to be our soloist. So that happens at least once a year. So this time I had suggested to our principal flutist, Rhonda Dayton, who's been with us a number of years, that, you know, it's time for her to do a solo again. I mean, so we talked about this over a year ago, and we were, you know, there's the discussion of, well, what flute concerto should we do? And so she's the one who came up with this suggestion. I was familiar with Gordon Jacob, but not this particular piece. And so I got a score of it. Then we deemed, oh, yeah, this is, the orchestra can do this. There are no problems there. And it's a pleasant, audience-pleasing work. So we went with it.
Mm.
Right. So that's how we got the concerto. It was the soloist's suggestion. That happened, by the way, in the last concert as well, when we did Bloch's Shlomo. Jerry Kessler, the soloist back then, he had requested to do that several years back. And I finally said, well, now it's time to do that. Sometimes I want to do a particular concerto, and I contact a pianist or whoever, and I said, let's do this concerto. And they say, okay. But this time, it was the soloist who made the suggestion.
I remember that piece, Bloch's Shlomo, Hebraic Rhapsody. That's a beautiful piece.
Oh, that wonderful thing, yes.
Yeah, right. that's a wonderful piece.
And this piece is completely different from that.
Yes.
First of all, it's a smaller orchestra. This is just for strings, so there's no wind instruments, no woodwinds, no brass, no percussion, no harp, no celesta, none of that. And that was a very passionate kind of a thing. And this is all much more, shall we say, docile, pleasant, gentle, pretty.
Mm.
Completely different kind of a work.
Mm. Now, was there any controversy or any story behind choosing the Johannes Brahms Symphony No. 3?
Oh no, that as well as our overture, the Freischütz overture, are standard repertoire, standard repertoire pieces. So we actually, since I've been there for 20 years, we hadn't done the Brahms before. So I decided, well, it's time we finally do it.
Mm.
So I just picked because nobody objects to Brahms. I mean, you know, that's the heart of the repertoire, Beethoven, Brahms, Mozart, Ravel, things like that. So I think it's just time to do it. And now, after Friday evening, we will have done all the four Brahms symphonies since I've been music director.
Oh, I see. Great. Mm-hmm. Now, this, for one thing, and then, of course, the Carl Maria von Weber, Der Freischütz?
The Freischütz.
The
right.
Freischütz overture. Familiar,
right.
but, and of course, Brahms is familiar only because his style. Now, I'm not very familiar with Symphony No. 3, but when you hear it, you immediately feel it's a Brahms piece. You just know it. Why is that, Barry?
Well, that is, well, you know, if you've been exposed to Brahms, sort of, you can tell the sound. If you've been exposed to Beethoven, you can say, oh, that's a Beethoven piece I've never heard before.
Right.
That's obviously Beethoven. You can say the same thing for Stravinsky or Aaron Copland or Gershwin,
yeah.
You know. If you've never heard Gershwin's Piano Concerto in F, which we did a few years ago, say, oh, that's got to be by Gershwin, even
yeah.
though I've never heard it before.
Yeah.
You know, so that it's just the style of the really great composers is comes out easily.
It's very right. interesting. That's very interesting
yeah.
because it is so iconically Brahms.
Right,
and,
right.
People will be able to make their own choice because we're their own judgment because we're going to actually sample some of the pieces. But I love these pieces, and also this Gordon Jacob piece, Concerto for Flute and String Orchestra. I had not heard that piece before.
Right. Well, Jacob is no longer very popular. I mean, in the United States, he was never really popular. Mm. He was an Englishman who lived a long time, 89 years,
mm.
from 1895 to 1984.
Mm.
But he was a very conservative composer.
Mm.
And sort of in the 1960s, when he was already, you know, becoming elderly, the avant-garde, with all of its modern craziness, became very popular. So people who were writing new music that was, shall we say, just much more listenable, were sort of frowned upon at that point, and he sort of fell out of favor.
Mm-hmm.
So his stuff doesn't get done a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And being an Englishman, he never did have a big following in the United States. You know, certain things are sort of, shall we say, national. Somebody is prominent in their own country, and it doesn't travel too well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, his sort of classical romantic style just sort of went out of favor, you know, with the newer music. So it's all very pleasant, very lovely.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the depth of the Brahms piece by any means,
mm-hmm.
but it's a charming little thing that shows that he knows how to take advantage of the flute styles and qualities and, you know, how to write an effective piece for the flute.
Right. Right. Well, I'd love to play a bit of it, is it time to play a bit of that?
That's fine with me.
Okay. Well, let's listen to a bit of Gordon Jacob, Concerto for Flute and String Orchestra. Wonderful piece.
Oh, yes.
Looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's something about the flute. Most of the wind instruments are reed instruments. Isn't that right?
Yes. Actually, and the funny thing is, the flute is the only one that's also not a wood. And it's just not made out of wood. But
yeah,
we call them woodwind instruments.
Right.
Well, that's because 300 years ago, they were made out of wood.
Right.
But by changing over to metal, to silver and alloys and things like that, the tone projected much better.
Right.
The wooden flutes are, which you might hear in a Baroque ensemble, doesn't project the same way. It has a different, sweeter quality. But for a modern orchestra that plays in a large auditorium, you need the metal instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. The others, oboe, clarinet, and bassoon, are definitely reed instruments.
There's something, I want to say, like a human voice quality to the flute that the other reed instruments don't have. They have their qualities, of course. The you know, other instruments, brass instruments, have their qualities. The flute is singular, I believe.
Oh, yes, no question about it. The way it can sing out and shine is quite an exceptional thing.
Right, right, right. Wonderful, wonderful. Love hearing the flute and looking forward to that on
right.
Friday.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're so blessed here in the South Bay. There's so many wonderful things going on. There's lots of youth music. We had some of that celebrated at the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Hermosa Beach recently.
Mm-hmm.
What's the state of, I also wanted to talk to you about, what's the state of education, music education, do you think, in terms of serious music? Are there lots of young people that are getting into, quote-unquote, serious music, classical music?
More than people think. Publicity is an odd thing. Once something happens and you create an impression, it stays in people's minds for years, even though the situation may change.
Mm.
So back in 1978, we had the infamous Proposition 13.
Yeah.
And this had the effect of cutting out some of the arts in the public schools.
Mm.
It did not eliminate it. But people think it got eliminated, and they think nothing has changed since 1978, which is rather a long time ago. But I myself, for a number of years, was a music teacher in the Los Angeles Unified School District, and it's really quite thriving.
Mm.
I taught at the elementary school level, but there were teachers at all, you know, middle school and high school, and with large programs, and not just instrumental music, but choral music, and there was a lot of stuff going on. And then there's other school districts such as Hermosa, Redondo Beach, Manhattan Beach, and various things down on the peninsula there, and they all have thriving music programs, you know, Torrance as well. So a lot is going on, but it just doesn't get the publicity. I mean, unless you've got a child involved in, or a grandchild involved in those things, you're not going to know about it.
Right.
So there's big stuff in L.A. where, as a result of Gustavo Dudamel and the famous Venezuelan El Sistema system of doing things, there's a new thing based on that. That gets publicity because it's got Dudamel's name on it and the L.A. Philharmonic, but all the other stuff that's going on doesn't get mentioned, just as it didn't get mentioned 50 years ago either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just there.
Mm-hmm.
So there is more happening than you would imagine.
This is a strange question probably, but why is the L.A. Philharmonic, why is it called the Philharmonic? Where does that term Philharmonic come from?
It comes from, you know, like 300 years ago, when orchestras started, you have to realize that, let's say, in the period of Bach, who died in 1750, we didn't have big orchestras.
Hmm.
Bach wrote just for small groups, basically. His Brandenburg concertos and things like that should be played by no more than 12 people, not by a 70-piece symphony orchestra.
Hmm.
So when we started getting these larger organizations, they needed a name for this. And, of course, back then, these were all Germanic traditions, you know, Bach, Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, and Philharmonic literally means a lover of music. Phil, as in philosophy, from the Greek, means lover of learning. Harmonic means, you know, harmony. So it literally meant a lover of harmony. Because harmony, as in the old-fashioned sense, was, you know, what all the music was based on. So the name Philharmonic just started out as lover of harmony. And then you got these lover of harmony societies, right. You know. And so that's the origin of the word Philharmonic.
Well, that's wonderful. When I want to know something like that, I wait for these shows so that I can ask you.
Be glad to help.
That's wonderful. Right. Wonderful.
Right. Yeah. So, I'd like to come back for a moment to your question about programming.
Yeah.
How we do that. Okay, so I already mentioned that the Brahms Third, I felt it was time to do it.
Right.
And you usually use a shorter piece to open a program, followed by a concerto, intermission, and then the symphony. That's the most traditional kind of a program. So I had two German pieces, the Brahms Third Symphony, which comes from roughly 1883, and it's been like 18 years since we did the Weber Freischütz Overture. That comes from 1820, 1821. So one piece was from the early German period, early 19th century. The other one was from late 19th century. And then for the concerto, we had something completely different, a 20th century flute concerto, to contrast it. So we have two German works, which are already different from each other because there are 60 years between them. And then we had an English piece from the 20th century to, you know, make an interesting flavor. I wouldn't have wanted a German concerto in there because then you're too much into the same style, and you like to get a little variety, you know. When you're eating dinner, you don't want beef as the appetizer, beef as the main course, and beef for dessert. You like a little more variety in there.
Right.
So that's one aspect of it. Another aspect, which people don't talk about very much, and we have to come down to this horrible subject called money. Some things are more expensive.
Right.
Because, so we have a community orchestra, but sometimes you do a piece that has extra percussion and a harp and other instruments, and you have to pay to bring in those musicians. Like the last concert we had with Shlomo and Scheherazade, we had two flutes, a celesta, three or four extra percussionists, a tuba player.
Right.
That all cost money. So that was an expensive concert for us. This concert has no extra musicians, none of that. There's no extra percussion, just timpani, which is normal, no harps, no celesta, no tuba. So you balance things not just musically, but also fiscally. So we have expensive concerts occasionally. We have less expensive concerts occasionally. So that's also part of the stuff you think about when you're putting together a season. You can't have an always expensive concerts. You can't have always cheap concerts. You have to balance it.
Has the Beach City Symphony put on like chamber music, chamber orchestras?
Oh, because that's not symphony music.
No.
So that's not our thing. String quartets are not what we're involved in.
Right.
You know, we do symphony music. I mean, the LA Philharmonic doesn't put on string quartets. They put on orchestra concerts.
Right.
It's the same thing. We're set up to do orchestra concerts, not to do chamber music. And if you did chamber music, you wouldn't want to play in the Marcy Auditorium, which holds about 1,500 people. It's just too vast a space for only four players. As a matter of fact, many years ago, when Marcy Auditorium was more involved in putting on music concerts, I went to hear a string quartet there by the famous, it was the famous Juilliard string quartet that were wonderful, and it was just too large an auditorium for them. They tried so hard to fill the place up with sound, but the four people just couldn't really achieve that. They should have been playing in a hall that holds 500 people.
Right.
You know,
right.
So all these things have to be balanced.
An intimacy, you're saying, to
it. Oh, yes, that's right. For chamber music, you have to have intimacy. I mean, chamber, we're talking about, just literally means a room, you know, a chamber.
Right.
So, you know, that's not for an auditorium. It's just for a room, you know.
Right.
One time I also went and heard a piano recital in someone's home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was not a normal-sized home like mine. This was a more elaborate house. But nonetheless, there were maybe 50 people sitting there, and you were like 4 feet from the piano.
Right.
I mean, it's a whole different effect.
Right.
And but yet that's the kind of thing that composers from 200 years ago were thinking of,
right,
that you would be that close to it,
right,
that you would be in something as large as Disney Hall or Marcy Auditorium, wasn't the thought in Beethoven or Mozart's era. They thought you were going to be much closer in.
Right.
You see? So it completely changes the perspective.
Well, of course, nowadays, you know, the modern era with modern music, they're using electrification and amplification, so they could fill any size space with sound.
Right, but the electrification only is used for music that is designed for electrification.
Right.
You don't electrify Mozart or Beethoven or not even Stravinsky. But today, you'll have composers who are using electronic keyboards,
mm-hmm,
or they might have an electric guitar or electric bass in the mix.
Mm.
So you have to have it. Or they might write for voice in such a way that it needs to be amplified. So for music that's written that way, that's fine. But we don't amplify the Schumann and Ravel and, you know, Bach. We don't amplify that stuff because it was not composed that way.
Right. Right. Well, this is a wonderful, I'm so glad that we're doing this because it means that we have a new concert coming up. Whenever you have one of these shows, ladies and gentlemen, that means we have a new concert, a new Beach City Symphony performance coming up this coming Friday, March 20th. There's going to be a magical evening of beautiful music right here in the South Bay at the Marseille Auditorium at El Camino College, a Gordon Jacob concerto for flute and string orchestra, Johannes Brahms Symphony No. 3, and Carl Maria von Weber Der Freischütz Overture.
Freischütz, right.
Yes, of course. We, of course, also love to highlight the fact that the music director, Barry Brisk, will have a pre-concert lecture at, is it 7:30 that you do that?
That's correct. It's at 7:30, and I will try very hard not to say the same things I just said on the radio.
You'll have to have two scripts, one for the radio,
right,
and one live. It's wonderful if you can make it early and have the music director give you an overview of what's going to come in the pieces later that evening. It's wonderful. The performances normally start at 8:15. Parking is $3. And it's most convenient if you have three $1 bills. It turns out the machines for parking take three $1 bills. It's very convenient. And I hope you can make it. It's going to be very, 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 very good. You're listening to the South Bay Show. We're talking with Barry Brisk, music director for the Beach City Symphony Orchestra. If you'd like to call in and ask Barry a question, you're very welcome to do so. Please give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. And briefly, we'd like to mention our sponsor is Viridian. Viridian, working with SolarCity to install solar energy in California, and of course the governor has Jerry Brown has stated that he is continuing to wish that we get 1 million homes covered with solar energy in California, and that's the goal for the state government. 1 million homes. It's the most impact that a family can have on global warming is to have solar energy installed on their home, much more than electric cars or just about anything else that the individual person can do. And it's also good for your pocketbook. Level electric rates for 20 years with the lease program, or you can buy the system outright. It's a great program. You can find out more at solar.greenenergyfire.com. That's solar.greenenergyfire.com. And there's no www there. And where does Green Energy Fire come from? Because I have a fire for green energy. That's the way we describe it. So, Barry, we have a wonderful, wonderful program coming up. Let's talk a little bit about the Brahms piece, because there is, as you said, the symphony had done the other three symphonies, 1, 2, and 4, I guess. And but this one is one that's not that familiar to the general public.
Right. Well, it's of the same quality, of course, as the others, because everything Brahms wrote was of the highest quality. But it has one unique feature. All four movements end softly.
Mm.
So from a conductor standpoint, we might say a certain ego standpoint, you don't get the same rousing ovation at the end of it because of the soft ending.
Mm.
So many conductors simply don't do it so often, whereas the other three symphonies have huge endings and, you know, audiences jump up on their feet and applaud like mad. But this one ends very calmly, and all the movements do. In his other symphonies, first movements are also have exciting endings. Mm. But this whole symphony is very calm. The endings are in between the beginnings and in the middles, you get much exciting stuff. But it's just it's not a pastoral piece, because, as I said, there's a great deal of dynamic conflict and action during the piece, but it just ends softly. In some ways, it's his greatest piece in the fact that his compositional procedures and how he takes a little three-note motif and weaves it in and out of all the movements, you know, in a very subtle manner, more so than he does with his other symphonies. So in many ways, it's almost the greatest, if one, in Brahms' case, can say that anything is greater than any other thing.
Hmm.
But it's really a marvelous piece, which, of course, deserves to be played more often. Now, he had particular cross to bear in life.
Hmm.
At a very early age, like in his early 20s, he was, shall we say, mentored by the great composer Robert Schumann.
Mm-hmm.
And Schumann said something like, which was kind of a standard phrase back then, "Hats off, gentlemen, a genius."
Mm-hmm.
So at an early age, Brahms is labeled as being great.
Mm.
So he had this burden to always write something that was great.
So
he couldn't just knock off something trivial.
Right.
So he always had, so everything he did had to be serious and particularly well done.
Right.
So he waited a long time before writing his first symphony, and it took him like 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly it took him a long time to do the first movement, because he sort of had said to him, it's hard to compose when you have Beethoven looking over your shoulder.
Mm.
Because Brahms was born a mere 6 years after Beethoven died. So Beethoven was a big influence on everybody.
Right.
And since he had been hailed as a young man as being sort of like the next Beethoven, that's one hell of a thing to live up to. I mean,
right.
He did, but he suffered when it came to writing symphonies.
Right.
So it took him like 10 years to write the first movement of his first symphony and a few more years to finish it off. But after that, he seems to have passed a hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
And his second symphony was written in one summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third symphony was written in the summer of 1883.
Mm-hmm.
So he got more comfortable with that. And the Fourth Symphony also no longer took years to put together.
Mm.
But it was getting, for him, it was getting past the First Symphony, which was the big hurdle. So by the time he got to numbers 2, 3, and 4, he was much more comfortable with the genre. And I guess he already proved that he was a great composer, so he didn't have to worry about proving it again anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of course, of course. Well, this is a wonderful introduction to Brahms' Symphony No. 3 in F major. We'll play a little bit of it, and here we go. Johannes Brahms, Symphony No. 3 in F major. right. I guess now isn't the right time to listen to the whole symphony.
Exactly. Friday evening is the time to do it.
That's right. If you want more, ladies and gentlemen, Friday night, March 20th at the Marseille Auditorium. And you don't have to buy tickets because the concert is free.
Like all of our concerts are free, as they have been for 65 years.
Right. This is the 65th season of the Beach City. Has it always been called the Beach City Symphony?
Yes, it has, since it began way back in 1949.
1949, ladies and gentlemen. This is such a treasure. We talk about it often when these performances come around, but there is a continuity here. 1949, we've had just great music available, great live music, by the way, in the South Bay, and it's just an amazing resource. And of course, they also do quite a bit of. They have a special performance for the youth. That performance, when does that come into play?
That will be on May 29th.
May 29th. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so we can talk about all of those issues and the Music Teachers Association, all of those things, when we do this the next time in May.
Right. You can always go to beachcitysymphony.org and find out more about the symphony and getting involved. And of course, the concerts are free, but the symphony does take donations. They do are always, I assume you're always looking for donations and or board members to join.
Oh, yes. You can always use both.
Yeah.
So if you come to the concert, you could make a donation right there and speak to one of the board members out front.
Mm-hmm.
They're very obvious because they have a little label on their lapel or on their jacket saying that they're board members.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just go to the website at BeachCitySymphony.org. We have a brand new thing there where you could make a donation by PayPal right on the right at the website, so
right.
No writing of checks and mailing it in and all that nuisance. It makes it much more convenient. Yeah, we always appreciate those things.
Right. Oh, I see. Becoming a member, you can become an angel, a virtuoso. You can be a member of the conductor's circle, a sponsor, benefactor, patron, associate, or simply a contributor. But there's no simple. It's it's wonderful. And along with the new website, I see here, I hadn't seen this before, I see on the member page, there's a new rendition of the classic logo with the mermaid.
Okay.
This is special to me.
Yeah, no, it's very pretty. Sometimes it's time to, modify things a little bit, get a little bit more updated.
Right.
We're not 65 years ago, we're today.
Right.
So, it's time to, make it all a little more attractive.
I assume this is the original logo was a mermaid playing a harp.
Something like that. But over the years, it's gradually changed, and I think the harp has sort of disappeared from the picture.
Right. And but it's nice to see that she's still around somewhere. Wonderful. So anything else, Barry, that comes to mind that we haven't talked about?
the Freischütz Overture,
yes,
is an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. The opera was first performed in Berlin in 1821. Unfortunately, poor Weber only lived 40 years, so this was coming sort of towards the end of his life, because he died in 5 years later in 1826. But it's a very German story to the opera. The title Freischütz literally means free shooter.
Mm.
Or a free shot. And it has to do with dark story, takes place deep in a forest, and there's a magical person there who can make curses on people, and it's sort of a dark kind of a thing, just similar to the way the original version of the stories by the brothers Grimm, who were German, those famous stories, many of them have been updated or, shall we say, polished over by Disney films, except they're darker than the Disney films and have a nasty side to them frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were frequently met ways of instilling a little bit of fear in children not to go out alone in the forest, what could happen to you.
Right.
So this opera is done all the time in the German world. It's as popular over there as is the Magic Flute.
Mm.
But this dark story doesn't really translate too well over here. And the opera, everybody who follows opera knows the arias. The overture is very popular. It gets done everywhere all the time. But the full opera is not done very much in the United States. That dark, very Germanic story just hasn't carried over here.
Hmm.
And actually, my wife and I were on Amazon.com the other day looking to get a DVD of it, of the whole opera, and there were only 3 offerings.
Hmm.
Whereas if you look for a Mozart opera, there's 25 different offerings and whatnot, but there were only 3 that were available.
Sure.
So it just shows that it's a fine opera. I've seen it. The arias are wonderful. The story, I mean, as an adult, you're not exactly spooked by this story taking place in the dark parts of a forest, but it just hasn't caught the American attention the way Marriage of Figaro, you know, or Beethoven's Fidelio, or any of the Verdi operas have. It just hasn't grabbed on.
Mm.
But the overture is very popular. We played it about 18 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a known entity.
Well, it's interesting and very interesting how these things, you know, different operas become famous and or become popular in different eras. Do you think the Germanic operas will become more popular over time?
Well, this is the only one that doesn't get played over here.
Ah.
I mean, all of the Wagner operas get played everywhere around the world.
Right.
You know, LA Opera did a fascinating performance three or 4 years ago of the entire Ring cycle, which got a great deal of publicity. So those German operas get done. Beethoven's Fidelio gets done.
Right.
You know, and other things, but it's just this one, which is, it's famous, people know the music, but it just hasn't caught on. It's sort of a unique piece that way, you know. But as I said, in the German world, maybe in London as well, it gets played all the time.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is your opportunity to support the music of an opera that really doesn't get a lot of love. So you should come out and see this on Friday at the Marseille Auditorium to ensure more playing of this von Weber piece. Okay? Here we go. I struggle with it. It's Der Freischütz.
Freischütz.
I did it again.
Freischütz. Yes. Yes.
Why is that? I don't want to say Fry because doesn't sound right, but okay.
No, that's the correct pronunciation.
Understood.
Right.
Carl Maria von Weber, Der Freischütz. This is for you. The overture, Der Freischütz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's a very dramatic, easily lovable piece, the overture.
I love this piece. It builds slowly, though.
Oh yes. Well, it's at the beginning. They're trying to create that dark mood for the, you know, the somber story.
Yes.
Yeah. But it has lots of exciting stuff in it, and you stopped it a little bit before the famous beautiful melody comes in.
Oh.
Which I will not attempt to sing for you. on telephone, that doesn't work so well.
Okay.
But, that was a wonderful piece.
Okay. Well, we'll have to hear it in person. And, of course, Carl Maria von Weber needs your support, ladies and gentlemen. We need to get this opera listened to more, so you need to come out on Friday and support Carl Maria von Weber. This is wonderful, Barry. I love doing this whenever the Beach City Symphony is playing. I'm so thankful that we started this a couple years ago. I look forward to it very much.
It was exactly 2 years ago because we met you at the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Yes.
And the one for this year happened just last Saturday, 2 days ago.
Right.
So that's how I can remember when we started doing this. But it's been a great pleasure. I really enjoy it.
Well, it's wonderful. It's great. It always gets me excited. I have we're regularly going to do these shows on Mondays, so I will always have a week of excitement right before the performance.
Good idea.
Wow. Okay, so we've just got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that's coming up on Friday?
Well, no, the whole symphony, that is the symphony program, the overture, the concerto, the symphony, the pre-concert lecture, that more or less covers it. We can always use more volunteers. I don't mean board directors, but if somebody wants to come up and be helpful in some way, for instance, at a concert, you know, there are various little jobs one could do. Feel free to speak to one of the board members, who will be very obvious wearing a little thing on their lapel saying that they're a board member. And if you'd like to just help out, you know, doing things, they would be glad to hear from you and take advantage of your assistance.
Right. Oh, and of course, I know that some positions have a wait list, but you're always looking for string players.
Oh, yes. Every community orchestra looks for string players.
Right.
So if you are a string player and you think you can handle this sort of thing, please contact us through the website.
Right. BeachCitySymphony.org. Wonderful.
Right.
Thank you so much, Barry, for joining us today. This is going to be fun.
Right. Thank you for having me on.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this coming Friday, March 20th, at the Marseille Auditorium, a wonderful program of beautiful classical music, and we hope you can all join us there. We'll see you there. I'll be there. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.